Hello and welcome back to the Dr. K Show. I'm so excited for today's episode because, first off, I have my most favorite person in the world, Kelly Bryant, with us today with Kelly Bryant Wellness. She is fabulous. You will love this episode. She brings all sorts of really great tips and knowledge to every episode we've done so far. And if you haven't caught her previous one, please go back to look at her previous episode. I mean, gosh, we dove into so many different things on that one, but weak pelvic floor, also looking at core strength and breathing and the importance of all of that and managing stress. Today, though, specifically, we are going to talk about the other part of this, which is a tight pelvic floor and the implications that can have for athletes, but also for anybody who might have a tight pelvic floor. So Kelly, welcome. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited to be back. I'm so excited to be your favorite person. I'm not going to tell your husband.
I just love it. Love
Only
it,
favorite
love it.
Human though. I'm like obviously behind Mr. Bjorn.
Yeah. Mr. Bjorn's is definitely my favorite animal. That's for sure.
Favorite creature. Being. For
favorite creature. He's like a creature. But yeah. Okay. So introduce yourself. Tell us sure. who you are, a little bit about your business.
Yeah. So my name's Kelly Bryant. I'm the creator and founder of Kelly Bryant Wellness. I am a yoga teacher, a Pilates instructor, and a personal trainer. And pretty much everything I do is centered around women's health and core and pelvic floor health. I think a lot of people don't realize that your core and your pelvic floor is a very integral part of your overall well-being. So many people don't seek knowledge or training around the core and the pelvic floor until they have an issue. And for the folks who are like listening to the first minute of this and deciding whether or not to stick around, yeah. stick around because core and pelvic floor information is relevant no matter, I mean, there may be something here for the men, for the people with penises in the audience as well, but core and pelvic floor information is just, it really is relevant for everyone throughout the spectrum of life. And so often we only seek that kind of care, like in the 9 months leading up to having a baby and in the 3 months following. And there's right. so much more to it than that. So what I do in my business is I work in small groups with people who are postpartum, but I also work with people with a vagina throughout their life. So often people come to me when they're having like acute or chronic pain issues, right. having to do with like low back pain, pelvic pain, pain with intercourse, anything that's sort of in that realm, often even things like recurrent UTIs or unexplained infections that aren't being treated with medicine, that actually can be a pelvic floor issue as well. So we can dive into all of those different things, but that's, I work with people kind of in groups for postpartum and then one-on-one for all of the other like very specific personal kind of issues that people have.
That's so great. And there's so many different options that people have. Like some people get a lot of success going to like a PT that can help them work some of those muscle tissues mm-hmm. out. Like there are internal massage
right.
things like that people can do. But there's also a really big benefit to making sure that you are strong, that your core yeah. is able to actually function properly. And we'll talk about that today. And that's,
yeah, I've had a lot of luck with people who've done PT, yep. but then they can't take that and make it applicable to the rest of their life. Totally. So often I work with people kind of like as a bridge between like, okay, you've had lots of internal manual therapy. Maybe you were given like some stretches or some exercises, but like now you want to go back to running or you want to go back to Pilates class or you want to go back to being able to freaking pick up the laundry. And like, you don't understand how to do that without being terrified. And of course, we'll talk about like fear and trauma and bracing and how that plays into all of these issues and why it is so important to gain a sense of competence and yeah. confidence in your movements yeah. before you try to just like go back to doing whatever after having, you know, any kind so of injury.
Good. So good. Okay. Then let's dive right in. So what, in comparison to a weak pelvic floor, what is a tight pelvic floor? What sure. are some of the symptoms? Give us some of the basics here.
Yeah. So one of the biggest misconceptions actually is that tight equals strong and that weak equals loose. And that's not the case. I mean, you know this, you work with people's bones and muscles and tissues all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Like often the tightest muscles are weak ones. They're muscles that are guarding or holding because they actually don't know how to do what's being asked of them. So that's one thing that's kind of helpful for people to realize, is that I'll often have people say like, well, I can't even do a Kegel. So obviously I need to keep practicing more Kegels. And that might not be the case at all. It could be that you can't do a Kegel because your pelvic floor muscles are so tight and also weak that they can't do the movement you're asking of them. So there's this kind of like holding that's happening. So if we want to get technical, the terms are hypertonic and hypotonic, which are not ideal for an audio format.
No.
Because they sound the same.
Yes. You have to be very careful about making sure you are saying them very clearly.
And whenever I do video and I caption it, like all of my video has like hype and then like all caps, like the auto-generated captions are like, what is this chick trying to say?
Yeah,
so
that's awesome.
Hypertonic, just like the word hyper would suggest, hypertonic means too much tone. There's just too much tightness in the tissues. Mm-hmm. And hypo is there's too much laxity or looseness in the tissues. I personally take issue with the term loose because I think it has like a whole like cultural connotation around the word loose, which is like a different thing. But if we're saying loose, we're talking about like literally the muscles, not loose women. Totally different thing.
Yeah, no.
Okay. Yeah. And people like, I really like literally the word loose, like makes me cringe. Like if you're like, oh yeah, she has a loose vagina. You're like, oh my God.
Like, yeah. That makes me cringe as well.
I may use the term loose or I may use the word hypotonic, but that's just like, there isn't enough stability and support in the pelvis. Mm-hmm. So that stability can be things like, you know, keeping the, and I know we already talked about weakness, so we're not going to spend a ton of time on this, like that looseness, but like the function of the pelvic floor muscles is to create structure, right? So that you have like a vaginal canal that's here and a rectum that's over here and a bladder that's over here. And if you don't have that structure, they fall into one another. And also the function of the pelvic floor is to be able to cushion. This is a big issue if you have a hypertonic pelvic floor. Think of it as being like as hard as a concrete sidewalk. And if anyone has ever done the like science project where you try to like create a thing out of like straws and rubber band that you can like drop an egg off of a building so that it doesn't, has anyone ever done this? Have you heard of this?
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
You have to like make a structure that an egg can like be dropped and not break. Mm-hmm. And in this metaphor, your bladder, for example, is the egg. Right? So you want to have this nice cushiony pelvic floor that isn't going to like slam, you know, that your bladder is not going to slam into and immediately empty because it's hitting solid, not rock, solid tissue. And then the other function of the pelvic floor is to create strength and to actually be able to engage and lift, right? So that's the thing where you're just like walking and you want to have pelvic floor muscles that can like hold your urine. And if the pelvic floor muscles are overly tight, they're freaking out. I love that this is visual because I'm like, they're just in there being like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And they're like, they're actually like clenching down and squeezing the bladder more.
Right.
Because they're overly tight and they're irritated. Right. It's just like, if you've ever done like a really intense lifting session and then you go to pick something up, sometimes like your body is just like, oh my God, I can't hold it. But sometimes like you're like crushing things in your hands because you can't like control how much force you're using because the muscles are so fatigued. Yeah. So those are kind of like the three functions are just like structure, springiness. I have to do three S's or I get lost, and strength.
Yes.
So that's like there can be issues with all of those things if the muscles are too tight. I didn't mention specifically with structure. I think of that as where you get like essentially the equivalent of like tendonitis, where you're actually having pain in the various tissues because there's so much tension, so much pull on the structures of the pelvis that you have, you know, things are getting out of whack in the SI joint, you have piriformis syndrome, you have sciatic pain, you have like all kinds of, like people get this is a great name. Weaver's bottom, which is when you have inflammation and irritation around the sitting bones. So your sit bones actually get inflamed at the attachment point with the pelvic floor muscles and the hamstring. So it's called Weaver's bottom because, like, I don't know, if you're a weaver, you sit on your butt and just like weave all day.
Oh, weird. I don't know. Isn't that learned it ever in those terms? I don't think they teach them in
It's like what it's, you know, ischiotuberosity, like, you know, it has like a technical name, but if you, I've like Googled it to be like, how do I explain this to someone? And it's like commonly called Weaver's bottom. And I'm like, not that commonly.
Not that commonly. I've never heard of that before, but I understand the idea though, right? Is that those, the muscles and the tissues all around that area, they can get tight. They pull on it just like any other joint, any other muscle, any other tendon in the body.
Just same like as tennis elbow, right?
Exactly.
It's the same thing. It's just in your crotch.
Right. Right. So from a symptom standpoint, they can look the same kind of, right? Like a weak and tight pelvic
floor
can kind of look similar. There are some differences.
Yeah. But this is one of the most confusing things is that people Google their symptoms.
Or they go to a friend
and
they say, hey, you should do some Kegel exercises because that's what worked for me.
Right. Right.
But do Kegel exercises actually work for somebody with a tight pelvic floor? Wrong thing to do.
It is. It's not the wrong thing forever, right? So if I have someone who's in that bridge between pelvic floor PT and going back to regular life, I feel like we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, like that being able to figure out how do I Kegel without all of the muscles in my pelvic floor seizing up. Yeah. That's a important function that you have to be able to have, but you have to first address the issue of like, it would be the same as like, I always picture like a meathead in the gym who's like, just like all solid rock and like, they can't lift their arms over their head. They can't do anything because everything is just so tight. And the, and the like, important thing to do first is like, let's just like get the intensity of that tightness down. So if people are not comfortable getting pelvic floor PT or they don't have access to it, which I mean, I know in my community, we have like one pelvic floor PT.
Oh, there's not that many. That's true. Yeah.
And there are many in certain like cities and things, but there are not manual therapy pelvic floor PTs everywhere.
Yeah.
And to be honest, if you're, I wouldn't go to just like an ortho because they're not going to do internal, like just like a regular sports PT is not going to do internal pelvic floor work. Only a pelvic floor physical therapist is going to do that. So I mean, they may be able to help you some, but there are things that you can do at home. So there's this thing called the wand, which is a tool that's for doing manual therapy on yourself, right? It's the same as if I grab a tennis ball and roll out my shoulders.
Yeah.
Sure. It would be better if I could go to a massage therapist or a PT who's going to like actively work on those tissues for me. But if I don't have access for whatever reason, because you have a kid and you can't take them because you don't have the money, you're uninsured or underinsured, 1,000 reasons why you can't see a PT.
Right.
So you could do that. There's these thing called Franklin balls that you can like roll around, like you use them externally. Mm-hmm. So the wand is an internal tool for intravaginal and like things like Franklin balls are a tool for external. So that's one way that you can work with the tissues if you don't have access to a pelvic floor PT, which is your first choice. Other things you can do are super simple: breathing and stretching. So like getting down on the floor, doing, I have a whole free video and I can give you the link so that you can post it.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Of stretches for tight pelvic floor, but it's basically like half happy baby, getting down in like a yoga squat, just anything. I mean, you can like visually, it's pretty common sense. Like you just think about your pelvic floor. One thing that's helpful to keep in mind is some people find it really useful to get out of gravity or reversed in gravity. So the same thing, like if you're trying to do diaphragmatic breathing, sitting upright, those muscles might be more resistant. It's like standing up and trying to relax your quad.
Yeah.
Like it just doesn't, it's like, I don't know about this. So I often tell people like either do your diaphragmatic breathing and your stretches like on the toilet, right? Where you, like, if you pee, it's okay. You're totally able to fully relax or to get out of gravity. So to lie down or even to lie down and elevate the hips so that you're getting the weight of your organs off of the pelvic floor when you go to release them. It's similar to, like, if you're carrying around a tray of drinks and you try to extend your arm, like if you've carried something like really heavy for an extended period of time, and then you, like, go to put it down and it's like, ow, 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 yeah. ow, ow. Then it, like, it actually would be really helpful if someone would take the tray of drinks off your hand and then you could kind of like, okay, let me extend this out now. Totally. Similar thing with, like, anything, if it's diaphragmatic breathing or stretches, if you can get the weight off of the pelvic floor. And that's especially so for like pregnancy, where you gain weight very quickly that the muscles aren't used to holding. So what did we say? We said manual therapy, stretching, and then breathing. I kind of mentioned there as well, just diaphragmatic breathing, getting the tissues of the abdomen and the pelvic floor to move. It's important to keep in mind that your core and your pelvic floor musculature is one of my favorite words, interdigitated. So they work together. They're going to interact with one another. So anything that's wrong in your abs is probably going to show up in your pelvic floor and vice versa.
Right. So when it comes to symptoms though, like, what would you say some of the symptoms of, like, a tight pelvic floor, like, how could somebody recognize if that was the problem? Again, screening is going to be really important, but what are
if you could just go to someone who will palpate and tell you, like, that's the best way. So if you picture, like, a Venn diagram, there's a small handful of symptoms, which are pretty unique to just being tight or loose or hyper or hypo. Pain with penetration is typically just a hypertonic issue. Obviously everyone has pain with penetration if you're not properly lubricated or things like that. But, like, I'm talking about, like, putting in a tampon, excruciating pain with vaginal exams, pain with sex, no matter what, or even with, you know, not, like, something the size of a penis. That's like pretty strictly a hypertonic issue. You know, I was going to say prolapse symptoms, but even people who have prolapse can have some, this is the other thing that's such a mind F word. you can have some tissues that are too tight and some tissues that are too loose. Just like, you know, the shoulder is a super complicated joint. I'm, like, working with a rotator cuff injury. I think I'm better, but I haven't tested it hard enough to tell. But if I'm having rotator cuff pain, it's because some things are too tight and some things are too loose. Some things are not working that are supposed to be. So you can have prolapse, and the prime symptom of prolapse is a feeling of heaviness. So feeling like, some people describe it as, like, feeling like a tampon's falling out or feeling like there's something pushing in on the vagina. That's commonly, prolapse is considered to be a weakness issue. And for many, many people, just doing Kegels cures it. But it's worth still getting evaluated by a pelvic floor PT who's knowledgeable and just eliminate the possibility that there's also tension at play, because you do want to treat slightly differently, right? You want to be a little bit more conservative with just how much are you doing the pelvic floor engagement. Like, I've had people in my programs who just, like, are a super straightforward case. Like, they come in postpartum, they've been, you know, they have symptoms of prolapse, they've been measured to have a prolapse, they've chosen not to do PT for whatever reason. They do their daily homework, their daily pelvic floor exercises that I give them, and they're cured within 3 months.
Right.
There's other people who it's, like, much more complicated. So those are, like, the two that are pretty strictly on the, in their own circles on the Venn diagram. And then in the middle, there's a lot of other stuff. So urinary incontinence, that can go either way. Specifically the inability to empty, having frequency or having urgency are all pretty good signs of hypertonicity. Also recurrent UTIs, right? So a recurrent UTI, obviously, urgency, frequency, pain, that will often be diagnosed as a UTI, but it also may just be misdiagnosed as a UTI and actually be being caused by by the pelvic floor being too tight. And then add to that, if the pelvic floor is too tight and you're not properly emptying, you can cause a UTI.
Right.
So it's like, it's this kind of like chicken and egg. You don't really know, like, obviously if you have a urine test and it's present, then like, yes, probably you have a UTI, but the UTI could have been caused by the fact that you weren't properly emptying your bladder in the first place.
Yeah.
So the frequency, urgency, and like the incomplete emptying is kind of that feeling of like, you go pee and you're like walking out of the bathroom and you're like, oh my God, I still have to go pee. Like,
yes.
Constipation is pretty clearly, obviously I'm assuming you've talked about constipation here before.
Yeah.
Constipation can have nothing to do with the pelvic floor. It can just be a GI issue, but if it's not a GI issue, you know, you've had labs done, you've all this work done, and like, there's nothing, quote unquote, well, again, chicken and egg, as mm-hmm. you know, if you're not emptying your bowels, things kind of like, I don't want to say like they get like septic, like they just, you know, you're holding all of this waste if you're not able to release your rectum mm-hmm. and actually pass mm-hmm. feces, then it's mm-hmm. just sitting in your body.
Mm-hmm.
And that's then potentially going to cause something that is going to show up on labs.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest things. We are not going to go into this time, but that's one of the biggest things with detoxification is that mm-hmm. if you don't have bowel movements that are fully clearing everything, what mm-hmm. ends up happening is you end up reabsorbing a heck mm-hmm. of a lot of what your body was trying to get rid of. So first off, you never want to start a detox if you're constipated. Second, if you mm. are thinking that you're trying to remove toxins, if it's just sitting around in your body, you're bringing all of that back in. And that includes mm. used up hormones and all sorts of stuff like that, that the body's trying to get out of the system. Mm-hmm. You can reabsorb those, and then those can trigger issues with your hormonal system as well. So again, full right. body, full system, always look at everything. But yeah. yes, as you mentioned, if there is a tight pelvic floor, then mm-hmm. constipation can be a part of that. And then you may be contributing to some of those other pieces
mm-hmm.
Of other health.
Yeah. issues,
right.
Similar to the UTI thing. It's like,
exactly. It's chicken.
It could be that there was, it could be that there was nothing quote unquote wrong with the bowels other than
that's right.
not pooping.
Yeah.
So often like the simplest thing is just figure out the diaphragmatic breathing,
yep.
shift, adjust your position. I have like ranted about this to, I feel like everyone I've talked to for the last 3 months, but I just put a new toilet in and I could not get a toilet that was a reasonable height. They're all so tall.
Yeah.
I can't even like when I sit on, and you know, our house is from like the 50s. I have no idea how old the toilet is, but right. like my toilet, the other toilet in the house is fine. Like it's a normal height. My feet yes. are flat on the ground and we've progressively gotten our toilets higher and higher. And they're called like a comfort height.
It's so weird, right?
I'm like, that's not comfortable. Like you can't pass a bowel movement if your feet aren't touching the ground. Like my feet, I'm not a small person. Like I'm 5'7" and my feet literally do not sit flat on the ground on this new toilet. I'm like, get you a squatty potty.
Yes.
Which I'm also campaigning for squatty potties to be renamed stool stools.
that would be so great.
I'm like, I am going to invent the stool stool and it's going to be identical to a squatty potty, except that doctors are going to be more likely to recommend it because they don't feel as ridiculous saying squatty potty.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Love it. Love it.
So if no one has a stool stool, you can go for now, get a squatty potty.
Perfect.
Practice deep breathing. I have some other like videos and things on like actually when you're sitting on the toilet, like what do you do? Mm-hmm. You can just Google like how to poop easier. I don't know.
Yeah, potentially. But okay. So those are some pretty good symptoms as far as what might look like the cause.
I forgot to say pain.
Yeah.
Obviously
the biggest one.
Pain. Like, so if you're having the, like, when I sit, my sit bones hurt, that Weaver's bottom.
Yeah.
If you're having, you know, like SI pain. So for anyone who doesn't know where the SI or the sacroiliac joint is, it's the little kind of dimply spot in your low back above your butt cheeks that, if that's feeling painful, that can be because things in the pelvic floor are asymmetrically tight and are like kind of torquing out of alignment. Mm-hmm. And then you have, you know, things like SPD typically only show up in pregnancy and postpartum. And then, you know, like we obviously talked about like UTI, like actual like bladder pain. So interstitial cystitis, similar to UTIs, recurrent UTIs or other infections, like often gets prescribed, and it's more a description. I think of interstitial cystitis as a description of symptoms as opposed to a diagnosis of a cause.
Oh, for sure.
So it doesn't, I mean, it describes what's wrong with you, quote unquote wrong with you, but it doesn't tell you actually like why.
How to fix it and why,
So pelvic floor tightness can be a cause of bladder pain. So just any kind of, if it's between your thighs and your belly button and it just hurts for no clear reason, it could be piriformis syndrome. It could be pelvic floor tightness.
Got it. So what are some of the implications, or what are some of the things we need to think about when it comes to pregnancy and having a tight pelvic floor? Because, and I think the key I wanted to put in here is we've talked pretty broad in general, but like for athletes specifically, mm-hmm. because it's so common to see a tight pelvic floor in athletes. Like, how does an athlete get there? Let's start mm-hmm. there first. How does an athlete get to a tight pelvic floor?
Yeah. So in general, this is such a fun topic for me because there's the idea of like the nervous system component of this.
Yeah.
Right. So athletes are, I feel like I don't want to say anything mean, but then I'm like, you're going to totally agree with whatever I know you're going to agree with this. So I don't know why I'm like guarding my words, but like athletes are often chronically stressed.
Oh, I talk about that all the time.
Yes. But I feel like, but people don't want to admit that, right? They're like, not me. I'm like so good. Like I can't sit in a yoga class because my brain is out of control, but I'm not chronically stressed. Uh-huh. I'm like, so a lot of people become athletes because it is a coping mechanism, and it is a coping mechanism that, so chronic stress contributes to pelvic floor tightness. Just like people hold their stress in their shoulders when they're sitting at work, people hold their stress in their pelvic floor. If you think of it from like a deep mammalian response, it's like, I am threatened. Let me make sure that I like bring my bowels with me. Like I need to like protect my core, like my soft insides and not like, I need to not go to the bathroom. This isn't safe. Same with birth, right? So this is like, if you're feeling threatened in a birth space, I have known people who've like gotten to the hospital, been like actively in labor, and then found out it was the doctor they didn't like. And their pelvis was just like, never mind, go home. We're done. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like actively in labor. So stress is a huge source of pelvic floor tightness. I see this also associated with anxiety, all kinds of mental health issues that people who, there's a strong, strong correlation. I actually haven't seen the numbers. This is my experience, that everyone who I've spoken to who has symptomatic pelvic floor tightness has another underlying mental health thing, right? Whether that's like diagnosed anxiety or it's like, you know, everything was totally fine. I, you know, was doing my Pilates just like I always had. And then a parent died, or I had a falling out with a child or whatever, where they like, there's some significant stress that triggers the pain to start. Sure. So the tie into athletes is often athletes become athletes because they are managing chronic stress or the actual process of being an athlete can be chronically stressing. So you're waking up at 4:30 a.m. You're not getting enough sleep. You're working really hard. And then there's the physiological component, which is like, if you're running, biking, like most athletic activities require quite a lot of pelvic floor stability.
Yeah.
So it may just be that let's say you're like perfectly, your mental health is impeccable. There's no chronic stress. You get 8 hours of sleep a night, blah, 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 blah. But you're still having these symptoms. It could just be that like the actual activity you're doing is very irritating to the musculature of the pelvic floor.
Totally. And on this episode, we won't have time to get into it, but like part of it too is a lot of people go into these sports and into these activities that they don't have the basic foundations for being able to utilize their core properly. Heck, there are so many people that can't even breathe properly when you just have them to walking, just taking simple gait. They can't activate their core properly in order to support that. So now you're going to say, well, now I'm going to go run for 26 miles or
you know, pitch miles. Forward at a 45 degree angle over a bike.
Yep. Or lifting really heavy weights. I mean, just going for like cleans, like your Olympic lifting, all of that. If you think you're going to be doing a bunch of that, that's also going to then, if you can't breathe and activate that properly, just in a, using like a bar or dumbbells, and then you're thinking you're going to put that to 100 to 200 to 300 pounds. If you can't activate your core properly, we're going to have a lot of problems. Maybe not right away, but as soon as you get further in, we're going to start seeing all sorts of things pop up. So that's the implication of this. Like, this is why it's so important to make sure that you tackle these things ahead of time, because they can lead to problems down the road.
Absolutely. And I think that, I mean, there's this whole like puritanical angle of it, which is just like, women are just men that are smaller. Like, we can't talk about the fact that there's a vagina involved. We can't talk about the fact that like inherently at the deepest level, the musculature of a, you know, someone born with ovaries and a uterus is not the same as someone born with testes and a penis. It's just the actual musculature of the pelvic floor is different. And so it requires different things, right? It's the same as like, if you look at, you know, the average training program, it's like, it, I mean, often it will prioritize things like pull-ups, and I'm not saying push-ups. I'm not saying those things are not useful. They are actually quite useful, and more women should be doing them.
Yes.
But deadlifts and squats are going to be much more useful for people with a vagina who have to figure out how to dynamically extend and contract their pelvic floor muscles.
Totally.
And being able to do those things, obviously, I mean, when I do this with my postpartum people, I'm like, we're going to start with the weight of your child. Like, totally. That's the amount of load that you need to be able to safely manage. And the number of people, which I know that there's like people who lift heavy who are hearing that and are scoffing and are like, you're anti-feminist. And I'm like, no. We're going to go from the weight of your child to like the weight of your partner. We're going to get there. But like, if you can't manage the load of your own body and 10 pounds of outside weight, like you can't be lifting 150 pounds. So
exactly.
That's the, and of course the same thing applies for if you can't run, if you can't walk and manage your gait, you can't run, right? I've had so many people who have, who've quit running because they have knee pain.
Yep.
And then, you know, they quit running years ago, but then they get pregnant and they have a kid, and all of a sudden the knee pain's back and all they're doing is walking. And I'm like, yeah, because you never dealt with the actual issue. Like, you're 100% capable of running many, many miles. I'm not gonna, but if you want to, you can, but only if you actually have the knee, hip, pelvic floor, foot strength and stability to do that. Same with biking.
Totally. So then let's quickly go into the pregnancy part of it, because this is important. It's part of just the life of women.
For
many women get pregnant. So, and that's athletes and non-athletes. So,
and there's a lot of athletes who hold off because they've heard so many horror stories.
Totally.
So I think that it is really also helpful to just normalize the fact that like, you can be a strong athletic person and that doesn't doom you to have a terrible birth. Because I think that's like, we started with the message of like, well, if you can lift and bike and run when you're pregnant, well, then you're definitely going to crush birth. And then we have, you know, stories like Serena Williams and like, you know, just other athletes that you know personally who are having emergency C-sections, who can't have a vaginal birth, who are having all of these horrible complications in birth. And I think people are rightfully starting to ask, like, what's going on here? Like, is this going to be safe for me? I don't want to sacrifice my athleticism.
Sure.
And or be like permanently injured because of something that happens in birth.
Totally.
So sometimes people have had a tight pelvic floor for many, many years, completely asymptomatic, and pregnancy and or birth is the first thing that actually irritates it. Or there are people, like this is myself included, who have never really had any pelvic floor issues like to speak of.
Right.
And then pregnancy and the type of training that they do during pregnancy becomes the cause of a pelvic floor tightness that then has the potential to cause birth complications or issues postpartum.
Sure.
I'm going to just lump those two together because they're similar enough, that's right? Fine. Whether or not you know that you have, like, if you're going into pregnancy knowing that you have some of these issues of urgency or incomplete emptying or pain with sex, like your little spidey senses should be tingling and you should be like, shit, I need to get this under control as soon as possible.
Yes.
But with or without symptoms pre-pregnancy, my professional opinion is that pretty much everyone becomes hypertonic during pregnancy.
Yeah.
It's nearly unavoidable because one, you're putting on a significant, like relative to your body weight, a significant amount of weight very rapidly directly on top of your pelvic floor.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like normally if I were to gain 40 pounds, I'd gain it all over my body. Like a lot of it would be in my butt and my legs, but like, no, it's on top of your pelvic floor for the most part.
Yep.
And you have all of this, these hormones that are creating looseness in the joints. Mm-hmm. And a misconception that a lot of people have is that looseness in the joints is going to make you feel loose.
Mm-hmm.
Not the case.
Sure.
Loose joints create tight muscles. If you don't have stability in your joints, the muscles are going to create that stability. So let's just take an example of yours truly, who is teaching and doing bar many times a week while pregnant. Didn't have any issues prior to that, but then you take, you know, all of the weight going straight down on the pelvis.
Yep.
External rotation. So things are kind of like pinchy in the sacroiliac joint, and there's a lot of shortening happening through the piriformis and all of the hip rotators on both sides. And then you add to that the fact that the joints themselves are unstable. So those muscles that you're working and tightening on purpose are already probably over tight and over shortened because they're compensating for this instability throughout the pelvis. And then, oh, by the way, when you go to have a vaginal birth, all of these muscles that you have taught to be in their shortest possible position have to completely release so that the actual bones of your pelvis can shift and move and allow a baby to pass through them. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And the same is true of like, look at spin or biking and the hip flexors. You're in this shortened position on the front side of the body. And then add to that, that we glorify having a teeny tiny baby bump. So there's, yes, this is a thing, right? People say this all the time. Oh, you're so cute. You're all belly. It's so, you're so little. You don't even look like you're 8 months. Like, are you sure? Like there's a lot of cultural like support for not getting very big.
Yeah.
And I think that that consciously or unconsciously leads people to do a lot of this like sucking in, trying to keep the belly from getting too big. I'm sorry, but if you want your baby to get into an optimal position, you need to spend as much time as possible with the abs not engaged.
Right.
Like you need to use your abs when you need to use your abs. And you need to be able to not use your abs when you're not using them.
Yeah, totally.
And the problem is that we mostly have people who can only do one or the other.
Totally.
So if you're me and you're like pretty intense as a human, and then you're like, I was the most intense I've ever been while pregnant with my daughter. I was just like a spitfire all the time. I was so tightly wound. So I was just like this constant like sucking in.
Yeah.
And she was, so we talked about the pelvis already.
Right.
She was also not in an optimal birth position.
Right.
Which is a thing, baby position is a thing a lot of people don't know about. So without going way the hell off the rails, head down is not all that matters. If there's anyone who's pregnant who wants to learn more about that, go to Spinning Babies, pay attention to, you know, hopefully you have a provider who can tell you where the baby is sitting, but they also, you can figure that out for yourself if you kind of learn about mapping. But my daughter was on the right side instead of the left side, which is the more preferable angle. Yep. So she was not tucked with the crown of her head presenting, mm-hmm. but rather kind of, she was also born with torticollis.
Torticollis, yeah.
Yep. So, which is common, but why is it so common? Shouldn't we be like having babies who are positioned in such a way that they're not on the top of their head crushed down? Like, so that's one place that chiropractic care can actually be very helpful is in baby position. And that's like, you don't even have to do anything. You could just get someone else to help you get the baby into the right position.
Yes.
But loosening up the abs is a big part of it as well. So if the baby is not, the point being, if the baby is not in an optimal position, you're going to have a significant amount of discomfort just from where pressure is being distributed through the pelvic floor.
Yeah.
And then you're going to be shocked when a vaginal birth isn't happening. And then you end up having intervention after intervention, and you end up with a C-section. And the, I'm trying to think, my sample size, of course, is only people who have sought help. But of the people who have sought help from me, I don't know that I've ever had a C-section client who didn't have a tight pelvic floor. Because what do they not have happen? Mm-hmm. They don't manually have their tissue stretched in birth.
Sure.
So you have all of this tightness that's developed over 9 months. You don't have a cantaloupe pass through it.
Right.
And then you also create an incision in the abdominal tissue.
Yeah.
Which creates more instability, more guarding, more trauma, psychological as well as physiological.
Yep.
And it's just like, it's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
So it's one case to avoid. Like if you have the option to avoid a C-section, that is one of the risks that I think is not explained a lot, is that people think like having a C-section is going to save my vagina.
Mm-hmm. Not always.
No.
Yeah, not always. And anytime that you cut into the abdomen, you increase your risk of getting things like SIBO and all sorts of other issues because of the trauma with the GI system. Even though it's down in your pelvis, it's still, when anytime you come into that section, it's it can have other implications as well. So yeah, that's, gosh, that's a really good overview.
Yeah.
Is there
a lot to think about?
for sure. But that's why I really wanted to cover this today, because it's the other half of the weak pelvic floor muscles, which you hear all the time. And so again, screening is going to be the most important. Like if you have problem, like if there's something that isn't right, then it would be a really good thing to try to find somebody that can help you identify what the problem actually is. If you try something like Kegels and they don't work, then maybe there's something else going on and you might want to see if what you're doing is either creating more of an issue or what else is going on there so that you can get that figured out. I think the piece where you come in really well is the strengthening aspect of it. It's not just about getting that, you know, maybe massaged or worked out or getting those exercises from your PT or whatever. As you mentioned, there's so many things that you can do in your training that can fit into maybe getting to those goals that you're looking for, but also doing so in a way that's going to help make sure that all of the systems are functioning properly. So you're not just doing strength training, you're doing strength training that is designed to help you in a way that will facilitate the proper movement of those muscles and of those joints and tissues, which is
It can be as simple as like, you know, I know a lot of people don't like to stretch or roll or whatever after doing a workout.
Sure, but they need to.
I think often that happens because they don't understand why they should
or how to do.
So you could think of it just as like from the perspective of like, what if you don't have to change your training at all? All you have to do is learn 3 minutes, 5 minutes of stretching that you can do after every session to like tell your pelvic floor that like, it's okay to relax. We're calm now. Go back to just being in your normal state. Just like I mean, I was about to say, just like you wouldn't, maybe they would, but like, just like you shouldn't finish a workout and just like drop the weights. Oh God, smacking my mic, drop the weights and walk out of the gym.
Yes.
Like you should do something to get your muscles to go back to like their normal state. So to kind of like leave people with something that feels maybe a little bit more like actionable, like a little bit less fear-mongering and a little bit more like actionable and useful.
Yep.
Two things. One, just breathe diaphragmatically more often. Look into stretches that you can do for the pelvic floor. Like be cognizant of when do I have symptoms and what makes them better. And then two is to just be a scientist, right? Be a researcher of the study of just you and pay, like actually don't just like pay attention, like actually keep a journal or something. If you have symptoms, keep a journal and track when you have the symptoms, what you're doing for training, whatever you think the triggers may be, right? I'm not going to give you like a laundry list of like, you have to track where you are on your cycle, every single thing you ate, like, but start with one thing, right? Mm-hmm. So if you think it's what you're doing in your training, track what you did in your training and what, if any, symptoms you had, and just pay it, like research it. And then you can say like, oh, I started doing Kegels because so-and-so said I should. And all of a sudden I had this huge flare up in symptoms, or vice versa.
Right.
So I do have the video for the tight pelvic floor exercises, which is just stretches. There's like a few things in there that are like a little bit more exercise-y, but for the most part, it's just stretches.
Totally. So we'll make sure to link that in the show notes. Is there anything else that you wanted to cover that we didn't talk about today?
I mean, I don't think so. I think a lot of it is just like, it's all the basics, right? Drink water, get enough sleep, move frequently at a variety of intensities, and do things outside of the same movement pattern all the time.
Yes, that's huge. That's great. That's a good way to, I think, to like wrap this up.
Yeah.
Where can they find you?
I am Kelly Bryant Wellness in all the places. You can come find me on Instagram. I post lots and lots of like really ridiculous things. I embarrass myself first so that you know that there are no embarrassing questions. If people want to work with me, my website, kellybryantwellness.com. I have several free videos and trainings and things like that. I do have an online studio. So if someone is in the place of being like, I'm not actively in pain, I'm not specifically prenatal or postpartum, I just want to do some like solid, intense strength, cardio, yoga, Pilates that is cognizant of the pelvic floor and cues the pelvic floor, then my online studio might be a good place to go as well, which is studio.kellybryantwellness.com.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Awesome. Well, that is great. Thank you so much for all of this. I did want to kind of just preface the end of this with a lot of what we talked about is just paying attention to recovery, doing the things that help to just keep your body healthy after putting that stress on your system. So whether that is making sure that you actually take time after pregnancy and after birth to just let your system recover, or whether that's just after your workouts, making sure that you give yourself some time to cool down and recover, it's all the same. It's the same concepts just applied a little bit differently. So keep that in mind when we're looking at, you know, how the body functions, pelvic floor, all of it.
No one would start Olympic lifting at 300 pounds.
No.
And you can, you know, you're going to learn, quote unquote, learn and progress much faster than when you were actually a beginner.
Yes.
But think of coming back postpartum as you did when you were a beginner. You don't just go back to everything you were doing. You do the modified version. You relearn how to do it. You start with lighter weights and you progress.
Yes. And remember, please, it's a season of life. You don't have to get back to the pre-baby anything until your body is ready for it. Give yourself the time and the space to just be in that season, please.
Absolutely.
Please. Yeah. Okay. That's a great way to wrap this show up. This was the Dr. K Show. Thank you, Kelly, so much for being here. Please stay tuned for the next episode and make sure to subscribe. If you liked this episode and if you would like more of these interviews, please make sure to subscribe and we will see you next time. All right, everybody, take care. Awesome. Okay. So that's that.